Thank you very much, Shane. Iran and Israel enter a second week of conflict as the Israeli military issue another warning of incoming missiles from Iran this morning. Meanwhile, EU diplomats push for negotiations after US President Donald Trump said a decision on any US involvement would be made within 2 weeks. I'm joined, first of all, by Paul Kearns, journalist based in Tel Aviv. Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, we are seeing, obviously, some pictures from Tel Aviv, some destruction recorded, and also we saw pictures from the hospital that was hit by Iran yesterday. What is the scene like when you get out and about on the streets? Are they deserted? Are people getting out and about doing their daily work, or what?
Well, it's a bit strange to say, but it's a bit unlike, a bit like COVID. You know, most places are closed, the schools, obviously. Most people stay indoors. There's a ban of public gathering of up to 30 people, I believe. I guess the biggest difference is that you wait for the sirens and then rush to the bomb shelters when you hear them, and you listen to the booms, and you come back up after a while and you look at the news and see where it was hit and if there was any reports of deaths. I guess it's kind of like a lottery of death, and the sirens go off maybe once, maybe five times a day.
Now, when you talk about rushing to the bomb shelters, I was watching one report, I think it was on CNN, and it was indicating that some people go to these communal bomb shelters, but other people have bomb shelters almost as part of their apartment. How does that actually work?
Well, since around the 1980s, all new apartments in Israel were built with purpose-built, they call Mamad, which is basically one room in the apartment stacked above each other in an apartment block, is reinforced with reinforced concrete, metal windows, etc. And that's where you go. That's where you sleep at night with the kids. In central Tel Aviv, the buildings date from the 30s and 40s, so they don't have them. So you would have to go to a communal bomb shelter, which could be four minutes fast walk, I guess.
And how effective have the early warnings been? I mean, obviously the Israeli forces have a sight of all the incoming missiles via the satellite technology or their own ground radar. How many minutes do you get before the incoming missile actually lands?
Sometimes it's 10. It's 10 minutes. It could be a bit longer before the siren goes off, but at least 10, they can tell when the rockets are close or missiles are close. Some houses that have the Mamad, there was a recent attack, a recent missile hit Petah Tikva in the east of Tel Aviv, and four people were killed, and they were in their shelter. But that was a direct hit on the building at that actually location, a few floors above and a few floors below. Nobody was injured. So it's very hard to know. In central Tel Aviv, some areas were hit, and you know the images are not unlike Gaza. There's widespread devastation across a number of city blocks with buildings like utterly destroyed, and there was no people killed in them, in part because maybe people were in the bomb shelters, which are more secure actually underground in the communal ones, or also that, you know, a lot of people have left the city to be further away.
So in terms of just trying to capture what it's like in the city of Tel Aviv, are people still trying to go about daily business, or is this a lockdown?
It's not a lockdown. If people are outside, it's strange to say, but if people are outside, it's not unlike COVID. They're outside for exercise. It's not rare to see children in playgrounds, but they're close to their home, or they know where the communal shelter would be. I mean, I myself have, you know, two kids. You bring them, and you're conscious. You have your phone with you. You first get an alarm on the phone, and then the sirens. So you have, as I say, 5 or 10 minutes to rush back. But I mean, it's a week now, so you know, people are not sitting indoors all the time. But the streets are pretty quiet. As I said, everything is closed. Very little traffic. And the only things that are open are supermarkets and food shops.
Now, what are you seeing on television about the damage to the state of Israel in terms of infrastructural damage and deaths, the hit on the hospital, and what are you hearing about what is the impact of Israeli strikes on Tehran?
Well, obviously, you know, as soon as a strike happens and the sirens are gone or lifted, you see what's happening in Israel on the TVs within minutes. I mean, at the moment, I think the death toll is 24. with up to 1,000 injured. The death toll, I presume, is relatively low because of the amount of bomb shelters that exist across the country. I recall about 17 direct hits in the greater Tel Aviv area. And they do vary, as I say, from, you know, a side of a building being taken out to devastation across a wide city block. Interestingly, about Iran, they do show and they cover the imagery, I assume, the rest of the world sees in Iran in terms of the impact and that very graphic story about with the studio, the Iranian studio.
Yeah, the TV studio. The
yeah.
So we all saw the pictures of the newsreader being interrupted by a direct hit on the studio building, even as she was reading the news.
We saw that, I presume, at the same time. So it's in stark contrast to the imagery from Gaza. So what they show in Iran, or what they show from the scenes of Iran, including devastation on streets, you see that in Israeli television also within minutes. Gaza has vanished from the Israeli news, from the television news. Gaza doesn't exist. You have to read alternative news sources. You know, the Israeli left-wing Haaretz will tell exactly what's going on in Gaza. But watching Israeli news in the last week, you would not know that 300 Palestinians have been killed in Gaza.
How accepting are Israelis generally, and there are always exceptions, but how accepting are they of this particular battle with Iran, the initiated by Israel, even as the talks were supposed to carry on last Sunday and they didn't? And that looked like, well, the US is trying to pretend that it was a ruse to catch the Iranians unaware. Or whether or not Israel jumped the gun and preempted the U.S. president, we will never know. But how accepting are ordinary Israelis of this particular war, which has been characterized by Netanyahu as existential for Israel?
I'd say, unlike the war in Gaza, the opinion is pretty, I wouldn't say unanimous, but there's a strong consensus. I mean, there's only a poll on the TV a couple of nights ago that said 75% supported what the government is calling a preemptive strike, which is 17% opposed. But up to 28% actually said that they believe the timing was politically motivated. There's a strong sense in Israel that this was inevitable. This, you know, this was going to happen, if not this month, next year, 2 years' time. And I suppose it's, you know, Israelis are familiar with the language that has come out of Iran in the last decade or two, and you know they're well aware of you know, quotes like Khomeini, who said that Israel is a cancerous tumor that needs to be rooted out of the region. So the existential threat is palpable. It's genuinely palpable. It's not something manufactured, I think, by the Israeli state or the Israeli government.
Now, it has been hanging over Israel, I suppose, for decades, and we played some clips of Benjamin Netanyahu over a period of 30 years saying that Iran was, you know, 3 weeks, 6 weeks, 6 months away from developing atomic bombs. And of course, it didn't happen, even though they had not managed to destroy the nuclear development infrastructure of Iran. So, I mean, the boy who cried wolf, it might sound a bit like that to those of us who are away from Israel, that Netanyahu has been banging on this drum for so long, and yet in the intervening years, what he predicted did not happen.
It's true that he's been, you know, it's a life commitment, a passion. Iran has been a focus of his political interest, and the desire never to see Iran having a nuclear weapon for 30 years. That is true. The boy who cried wolf, I guess Israelis, you know, the risk.
We just, I think we can barely hear
sorry,
you.
But, sorry.
Yeah, you're back now.
Sorry. Yeah, what level of risk is acceptable? If a country is committed for 20 or 25 years or 30 years or 50 years to your utter destruction, is 1% acceptable? You know, is 0.5% acceptable? So, you know, you have to weigh those things up, and people do in their minds. Would I continue to live here if Iran had a nuclear weapon? It'd probably be a deal breaker in my head.
Sure. I suppose the issue, too, is that Israel has its own nuclear arsenal, which is not subject to any inspections by anybody. So, you know, it would be a standoff. I mean, the whole concept that kept Russia and America apart was the concept of mutually assured destruction, MAD, as it was called. that if one unleashed a weapon, well, its own destruction would surely follow.
Well, I would imagine there's hardly, there were very few Israelis who would agree that Iran having a nuclear weapon adds stability to the Middle East. Its history in terms of supporting violence and terrorism is well documented. You know, maybe it was a slip of the tongue of the German Chancellor Friedrich Merz to say that Israel has is courageous enough to do the dirty work. And I, you know, that has got a lot of blowback, I guess, in the European Union. But that would be a view that would be very common here and elsewhere.
Now, the question of regime change, and I mean, it's something that the regime in Tehran fears, because I think if it were to be overthrown by some sort of popular uprising, the fate of those in charge of that government, which have, you know, you brought so much misery on their own population and on those hapless enough to visit and find themselves detained by the secret police, they know what their fate would be. So do Israelis believe that regime change is possible?
It's a discussion that takes place constantly in the news, and there's quite not a small minority of Israelis who speak fluent Persian because they're descended or they left Iran in the 70s and 60s. And they're apparently keeping close eye on conversations that are taking place in Iran on this. I think, you know, the government here and maybe people, there's a hope value that that will happen. I don't believe realistically in the serious analysis, even within Israel, that regime change is possible. And, you know, there's discussions or serious analysis that they could unleash, you know, unexpected worst scenarios, both for Iranian people and for the region. I mean, Netanyahu does talk constantly and talks repeatedly about the possibility of regime change and constantly distinguishes between the people of Iran and the regime. In a way, I think that's very interesting that, leaders are, he does not do with Hamas and the Palestinian population of Gaza.
Yeah. Now, he did invite the people of Iran to revolt and to overthrow their own leaders. But, you know, before he said that when Saddam would be overthrown, encouraging the Americans to go in, and they did just that, he predicted a golden age of stability in the Middle East when Saddam Hussein was overthrown. That did not happen. In fact, it probably made matters worse. And in the event, he didn't have any nuclear weapons anyway. So I'm wondering what the vision is. Is it that you'll have this Persian nation back to the days of the Shah, where women were free to wear miniskirts if they wanted to, go to university and thrive? Is that the utopian vision of the Middle East and Iran's place in it that Netanyahu is trying to sell?
Well, you know, I think utopian maybe is a strange word to use. I think that we all accept that the rights of women in Iran and the rights of gay people are, you know, bitterly and seriously oppressed. So we also see the images from the 70s that we do of Afghanistan, of women walking around freely with, you know, clothes that people in the West wore. So is there an aspiration or a hope that, you know, the kind of secular freedoms that exist in Israel might exist there or come back, I guess. But I assume most of us in Israel or outside would think that would be a good thing. And I would imagine many people in Iran would too.
And Paul, what's the analysis of President Trump's equivocation at the moment in that he is kind of saying, I'll give it 2 weeks before I make a decision? Obviously, there are people pressing upon him, don't get involved in a Middle East war, because if you drop those bunker buster bombs, you will be involved. I was watching a description of what has to happen. They come from afar. They'd have to be refueled by American refueling planes in the air. They would have to have fighter cover from American pilots. It would be, you know, hazardous and potentially dangerous for the pilots and so on. Operation. What do Israelis want to happen? Do they want the U.S. to literally bomb the whatever out of the nuclear facility? Or are they hopeful that some sort of negotiated settlement can be reached with the Iranians finally giving up their quest for nuclear weapons?
On the latter point, I don't believe at the moment there's any real belief in Israel, certainly at government level or what's communicated on the television, that negotiations are a valid path at the moment. Israel, I think, and the government didn't take this monumental risk with a view to having negotiations in a regime that it doesn't trust, a word that comes out of their mouth. So they're in, they're in this to finish it. There is a belief, widespread belief in Israel, and a hope that America will get involved, and that the necessary equipment and deep bunker bombs that Israel apparently does not have will be used against a couple of these sites. And the work to date, or the destruction to date unleashed by the Israeli state on Iran's nuclear facilities, is recognized as not sufficient to deter an advancement of its nuclear weapon program for, in the immediate few years.
Paul Kearns, journalist based in Tel Aviv. Stay safe, Paul, and thank you very much for joining us on the program today.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.